document is Saruti versus BASF Corporation. Ms. Bummer.
Good morning, judges, counsel, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Patricia Bummer. I represent the plaintiff appellants in this case. The grant of summary judgment in Saruti and his fellow plaintiffs versus BASF and the fellow defendants was an error for three major reasons. The first reason is that the district court appropriated the role of the finder of fact by making conclusions of fact in the district court opinion granting summary judgment. The opinion contains numerous examples of near verbatim statements of conclusions that or near verbatim statements from the defendant's brief. A prime example is the conclusion that the plaintiffs weren't qualified for jobs in the quote-unquote new organization. Secondly, the court erred in finding that there was no direct evidence of discrimination. And again, the district court simply took what the...
By direct evidence, do you mean these comments about out with the old and in with the new, that sort of thing?
Yes, that's one example, Your Honor.
And calling Al an old man?
Yes, Your Honor. Those are the age ones.
How old is he?
He's in his 50s, Your Honor. I think he's 56.
I don't understand the significance you attach to out with the old. I mean, old has two meanings. It means aged. It also means, you know, so it's aged, old versus young, but also old versus new, new and old. And that doesn't have any connotation of age discrimination.
In this case, the statement was made in describing a restructuring program, and it was made when Kathy Weird and Jay Klein were announcing the restructuring program and answering questions from the Joliet workforce where people asked whether there would be layoffs if they would lose their jobs. And also the statement came on the...
I don't understand.
I'm sorry.
I mean, suppose you said, I don't like the old workers in my plant. I want to have a bunch of new workers. Out with the old. They're no good. I want new workers. That wouldn't be age discrimination.
Well, it would if it was made by decision makers who subsequently terminated those employees, Your Honor.
Absolutely. The same thing. Suppose they say, I'm getting rid of my whole existing workforce. I want new workers. That has nothing to do with age discrimination.
Well, in that case, one would have to look at other
things.
So,
like I said, I don't like my old law clerks. I want new law clerks. My old law clerks, they're in their 20s, right? But they're old. They've been working for several months. Maybe I think they're stale. Mm-hmm. I want new ones. This has nothing to do with age discrimination.
Well, in that case, your law clerks aren't in the protected class, Your Honor.
But that's not our point. The point is that we often use the word old without reference to age, but only with reference to how long they've been on the job, whether we think they're fresh or stale. So I don't see how standing alone, whether you're talking to employees, whether it's decision makers or anybody, I don't see how it connotes age discrimination.
Well, there are two points that I'd like to make here. Number one, it was made on the heels of a voluntary retirement program, and there's evidence in the record that that program wasn't voluntary. So here we have the retirement program, and then we have...
What's not voluntary?
The retirement program.
I thought it was an option.
It was an option, but there was testimony in the record that employees felt coerced.
Well, sure.
To
I mean, otherwise they're going to take this test.
Right.
You know, yeah. And maybe they thought a bird in hand's better than two in the bush. So.
Well, and if things turned out that was the case.
Yeah, but that in itself, that of course, that's the standard way of dealing with these things. You try to get the people to leave voluntarily, and of course there's the latent threat if they don't leave that they may be fired. But that also is not age discrimination. You're permitted to try to shrink your workforce through a combination of voluntary retirement and terminations.
In this case, Your Honor, we contended that was direct evidence. That's one issue, whether it's direct evidence. And also, another issue, you're saying, well, it's not age discrimination.
Talk about direct or indirect. I don't think it's evidence. It seems to me hopelessly ambiguous. Just old versus new.
Mm-hmm. But, well, number one,
something better than old versus new?
What's
the worst thing they said?
Well, they also made a lot of remarks about old man, and they made a lot of racist remarks, too, which deals with the race part of it. But, and the frequency and chronicity of the remarks, I think, too, would make them worse.
Well, do you have other evidence besides remarks? Or is that it?
No, you mean in terms of direct evidence, Your Honor?
Any kind of evidence.
Yes, the record had quite a bit of evidence that the district court did not consider. For example, the district court decided that the plaintiffs had failed to qualify for jobs in the new organization, and they simply accepted the defendant's statement as to that, whereas the record actually contained evidence that there was no difference, ample evidence that there was no difference between the old organization and the new organization. For example, the human resources director in Joliet testified that as to the individual contributors, of which Pearl Adams, the plaintiff, was one, that there were no differences between the individual contributor job in the old organization and the new organization. The defendants tried to cast this as a hiring case, saying everyone's job was in jeopardy, but the authority that they cite, Hartley versus Wisconsin Bell, dealt with a downsizing, and this was by no means a downsizing.
Is this a cleansing? Is this some kind of an attempt to upgrade the workers? That some of them weren't meeting these competency tests, and they wanted to weed out those who weren't up to par and then hire new people who were better than they were? Is that...
The defendants never said that.
Well, I'm asking you, because you said this isn't a RIF.
It's not a RIF. We think that it was a method of getting rid of older African-American and Hispanic workers.
Well, what was the end result?
The end result was...
Obviously, your clients were terminated, but wasn't there still a reasonable balance of people in protected classes that passed the competency test and were retained? I mean, they didn't just wholesale get rid of the old and the black and whatever else is...
No, we contend that the record shows and our expert testimony shows that the statistics were, that the terminations were very carefully orchestrated, because if they had gotten rid of one more person over 40...
And one less under 40.
And one less under 40, they would have violated the EEOC 4/5 guideline.
Is it wrong to try to keep that in mind when they're going through this process so that they stay within the law?
Well, wrong in what sense? I mean, they kept somebody who obviously was not qualified.
Somebody in a protected class?
Yes, Andrew Partilla. But their reasons for keeping him were not credible. They said that he was a keeper but in the wrong job. However, his assessment indicates that he made bad decisions.
How can you use discrimination in favor of a Hispanic? Is that what he is?
I'm sorry?
How can you... Is he Hispanic?
No, Your Honor. his wife.
I thought you said there was someone in the protected class who was retained.
Well, Mr. Patillo's 51 years old.
He's old. Not new.
That's relative, Your Honor, but...
Yes, but, okay, but how can you use evidence of discrimination in favor of someone in a protected class as evidence of discrimination against that same class?
Well, we maintain, number one, that the record shows that the numbers were manipulated, and number two, that similarly situated employees also have to be analyzed in terms of performance. And our theory is that people were retained who were not in the protected class and people were let go. Well, for one thing, they got rid of just as many people as they could, and also there were similarly situated workers who probably should not have been retained but who were retained.
Well, wait a minute. Similarly situated, what's that?
Well, they had the same...
They were not in a protected class or were in a protected class?
They were not in the protected class.
What about this competency? There were six levels. If you had six negatives, I guess, then you were terminated. And didn't the panel... you had this sort of objective test that the outside agency did. Is that right?
Yes.
And then they didn't know what age or race or anything else. I'm not sure how they operated.
No.
And then you had this internal panel.
Yes.
Of people who obviously knew the various people at issue, right?
That's correct.
And didn't they disagree with whatever this outside agency is in several cases by erasing the negative and keeping those people?
Well, in the case of the plaintiffs, they actually...
Not the plaintiffs, other people. People who might have been terminated, but for this panel.
Right, people who were younger.
No one in the protected class got a negative erased so they could stay.
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
I'd like to... I see I'm eating into my rebuttal time.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Romer. Ms. Patch?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'd first like to address a couple of comments by my esteemed opponent, which are simply not true. She represented to the Court that Mr. Allen is 56. Mr. Allen was 49 at the time of the assessment, which occurred in 2000, so he's not 56 now, and he was in his 40s at the time. Counsel also just represented to the Court that no one in a protected class had their scores raised by the panel. That likewise is a completely false statement. There were a number of people in the protected group, both in terms of age as well as in terms of race, who did have their scores raised, and as a result of the scores being raised, were retained when they might have been discharged.
I didn't understand this business of DDI didn't know the age, race, or sex of the people they were grading. How is that possible?
Well, presumably...
You have information about these people. From what would usually be pretty clear what age and race and so on they were.
The only information that DDI had was the individual's name, and
so
they never actually...
That, of course, you learn a lot from a name.
It does, and obviously they spoke with the individuals by telephone, so they presumably could have distinguished female from male. I don't think I could go any further than that in terms of what people can
old
and can't
and young,
tell.
Black, Hispanic, or white.
I don't know that you can tell any of those things. Now, they did know in some instances, I think that in one instance in particular, a Hispanic employee, who was the oldest employee at the site, who had been offered the early retirement program, who didn't take the early retirement program, he was retained through this process, and he had to have an interpreter for the DDI exchange because he didn't speak English terribly well. So obviously there they would have known that he was Hispanic. But
weren't they given any information about, a resume of some sort, the people's work experience?
Not as such, no. Employees were asked to fill out a form that had them check bubbles about what kinds of work they'd had opportunities to perform. But beyond that, the nature of the exact work that they were doing was not really a pertinent consideration.
What was asked in these telephone interviews?
There were a series of exercises that sort of scenarios where they lay out a fact situation and ask the person to react to it, to come up with a solution to a work put to a problem that's presented, a hypothetical problem. They'd also ask questions, targeted selection interviewing, it's also often called, like, tell me about a time that you overcame a dispute at work, and the person talks about their experiences, and one is supposed to be able to tell from that how someone would react in the future.
This fact, what does this plant make?
The plant is a chemical plant that manufactures polystyrene pellets, which are used to then manufacture things like, I think, like linings and refrigerators and various plastic things.
Now, so what does DDI know about the polystyrene pellet manufacturing process that it can ask intelligent questions of these workers?
Again, DDI would not know necessarily anything about polystyrene.
So how could it ask one of these workers how to overcome a problem at work?
What DDI does is look at it deals with hypothetical situations, so that the problem, for instance, wouldn't focus on a polystyrene plant. It would simply be a hypothetical situation of, you have this problem. I think the exercise in that case involved people that were making something having to do with tires, and people were having a lot of repetitive motion trauma, and there was also a lot of absenteeism, and it was a question of how would you address those kinds of issues? What would you do? And they were looking for people to talk about working with a team, gathering information from different sources.
Well, you wouldn't ask a question like that to an operator, would you?
Yes, those were the kinds of questions that were
asked. But an operator doesn't have any responsibility for absenteeism or repetitive motion injury.
What the company was trying, what BASF was trying to do in this plant was, in fact, to upgrade the workforce so that they would act as though they owned this facility, so that rather than being waiting to be told, do this, do that, that they would take an active role in identifying issues, in trying to think of solutions to issues, in working with other people, drawing upon other resources, acting as though they were owners of this facility. That was the whole point of this exercise. It was to take people out of the traditional role of, I won't do anything, I won't think unless you tell me to do something, I won't lift a finger. That's what the company was trying to get away from in order to increase its profitability and to increase They had set a goal of 13% return on assets as what they wanted to get out of this plant. The plant had never produced at that level. Some of the time the plant was in the red. Some of the time, even when it was profitable, it was at a very, very low margin, 1-2%. And the company indicated that was simply not good enough. They needed this decision to really return profits to the company structure overall. So that was the charge given to Mr. Klein, the head of this division. Restructure your company, and that's what they did.
Particular problems been noted in the plant? Particular management problems?
No. The plant wasn't terribly efficient. Again, there was a lot of, I think through this process, this whole restructuring process, they dramatically reduced the number of employees at the plant, and they have in fact increased the output of the plant. But no, they weren't specific, here's our problem or here's our problem. And to the extent that those things had existed, the company had already gone through an optimization process the previous year, which attempted to deal with those kinds of issues, to deal with the concrete, we've got a kink in the process here, so let's try to address that and work, iron that out. That had already been done, and the company still wasn't returning any kind of reasonable or the expected profit that the corporation wanted to see out of this facility. So that's what started.
What were the type of scores or scoring answers that the management reduced? Negatives?
Well,
that would be an example.
How the process worked was DDI conducted these exercises with the employees. DDI came up with a range of, this is what we think based upon what these employees have told us. This is how we judge them. And it was a 3-point scale, so that 3 was a strength, 2 was okay, proficiency, I think they called it, and 1 was a developmental need. The company received that information. The selection panel got that information. It was just a 1, 2, 3. It had no other discussion, no anything. It was just in each of these scored areas of competency. The panel's job was to look at that, to understand what that competency dealt with. For instance, initiative, what is initiative, how do we define that, or team building, or teamwork, how do we define that? And then they'd look at the score and they'd say, well, does this really represent what we've seen this person in terms of our interactions out on the job? And if the panel agreed that yes, this is accurate, then the score remained unchanged. If the panel felt that the score was inaccurate, either because the person really had shown more initiative than apparently they did in this exercise, or because the person didn't actually behave the way they had answered these questions in reality, then the score
was... So the panel knew who these workers were?
Yes, the panel for the operators consisted of managers at the plant who had been selected through this same process to continue on in management positions at the plant. So they were all acquainted with the operators, obviously some better than others because of work relationships.
If they knew them, what benefit the DDI score was?
It was another perspective, Your Honor, and that's what the company was trying to do. The company was trying to come up with a system and spent a lot of time and money doing so, which would be fair to everyone, which would give everyone sort of an even shot at retaining their positions in the new restructure.
Now, were there any people whom DDI rated as good, as threes, whom the company then, reduced to one or something?
Yeah, I'm sure there were instances like that, just as there were instances going
but
in the other direction.
There isn't detail. Were any of the plaintiffs people who got high scores from DDI and then had their scores lowered by the company?
In a few instances, yes. In some instances, no. It varied from plaintiff to plaintiff. I think the important thing here is that the record below demonstrated that from a statistical perspective, there was no pattern to these changes. And this was part of the expert report, Dr. Topel's expert report, which was presented to the court below, indicated he analyzed the changes that were made by the company in the scores to see if there was any impact on any protected group. And his conclusion was that there was no statistically significant impact on any group. The changes were essentially neutral in terms of going up, going down, in terms of who was being affected by the changes. Throughout this case, I think it is important to note that there was no negative impact on any protected group. And plaintiffs essentially argued to the court, this is pure speculation, they argued to the court, because there's no disparate impact on anybody, that must mean that this selection process was gerrymandered for the specific purpose of getting rid of only blacks and Hispanics and older people. They have no support for this proposition of theirs. There's not an iota of evidence anywhere in the record that anyone gerrymandered these results. I think all of the evidence in the form will simply show that this wasn't a uniform, consistent, fair process, that the company accomplished what it set out to do, which was to increase the quality of its workforce, but to do so in a fair and consistent way. There's only a couple of other points that I would like to make in my remaining time, and that is I think that the court has to analyze this case, as the district court did, within the context of what this decision was and what this process was. I think the Seventh Circuit case law is very clear that when you're dealing with a massive restructuring of the sort that we had going on here, where an employer is in fact trying to raise the bar, that the important thing is looking at the criteria that the company has identified as its decisional criteria. In this case, for the operator group, that was 6 developmental needs. And analyzing the case whether the people were qualified and whether there was evidence of favorable treatment or that the unprotected class getting better treatment, has to focus on those criteria. That's exactly what the district court did, and it did so correctly, I think, based upon the court's decisions, and this court's decisions. It is really a hiring case rather than a discharge case in the traditional sense, because everyone was being examined to determine whether they would be retaining a job with the company. It wasn't just an individualized misconduct or an individualized poor performance. That's what makes the plaintiff's case so problematic, because they insist on treating it or ignoring that reality. They insist that somehow we're supposed to engage in an analysis of their previous performance evaluations, when the previous performance evaluations had no relevance to the company, had no relevance to this process at all. The company was looking at something different. In terms
you just told us a while ago, though, that the second panel, the internal panel, did in fact make judgments according to the what they knew of the worker. Well, that sounds like they were looking at past performances in order to assess future viability of the new workforce.
What they looked at was conduct. How did a person deal with a particular situation? For example, if the person groused about changes in policy, that would indicate to the company that this is not a person who's innovative, who's likely to act as an owner. They're sort of retrenched as opposed to looking forward. That would be the example of the kinds of conduct they looked at. What I'm talking about in terms of what plaintiffs have done is that they look at the paper that was written about these people, examining their performance against the standards as they used to be. And that's what I think is
permissible. Well, that certainly had to be relative and probative of future, in that inquiry as well. It's...
Your Honor, whether it would have been probative or not, the fact of the matter is that no one ever looked at the old performance evaluation. And therefore, to say
I
that...
I think there's a tiebreaker.
Ultimately, no.
I thought it was just in the record that from one of the human resources people that she had, in fact, looked at this.
Well, what she indicated was that a performance rating and these performance evaluations, nobody ever examined them individually. What they were condensed into a score, again, of a 1, 2, or 3. Did the old performance evaluations indicate generally acceptable performance, negative performance, or exceedingly good performance? And that score could have been used if there were a tie. The company never found that there was any tie, and the company never used that score for any purpose.
And whose testimony do we look to see how that all worked out?
Ms. Reardon testified in her deposition about that process. The panel, I see that my time is complete.
Wendy, you can answer Judge Ripple's question, of course.
The individual panel members, selection committee members, they all testified that they did not look at performance evaluations and did not ever, that was not part of the consideration. So their testimony is negative, but it supports the same proposition. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Panish. Ms. Romer, how much time does she need? 2 minutes? 3 minutes?
Okay. Right. There's been talk of a raised bar, but there's no evidence anywhere in the record of this raised bar. There's no, BASF never supplied any job descriptions, any list of qualifications, or any hard evidence that it was any different. And the plant manager stated that the objective of the assessment was to decide whether Joliet employees had competencies to perform the jobs they were in. And BASF paid DDI $500,000 to do these assessments. And the trained assessors found out that Daniel Allen, for example, Richard Clinton, Stephen Davis, Terry Cerruti, and Steve Rial were proficient and even strong in the identified competencies. And then BASF threw out those scores and terminated those people. Steve Davis, that was given a glowing review by the decision makers the same day that they lowered his DDI score to be selected him. So how credible is that?
Your counsel tells us that not in effect of saying, well, you're doing a good job under the old order, but the way we're going to run things from now on, you just don't have the skill set, the attitude that we need to fit in. Doesn't that reconcile the two?
The evidence of that, Your Honor, that there was a different skill set that was needed. Where is the hard evidence?
What kind of hard evidence other than a change in management policy would you expect them to manifest?
Well, I would expect some kind of evidence. It would seem logical to have evidence that, you know, these jobs were somehow different, that the skills that were required were somehow different.
What the manager said was that the company wanted workers who showed more initiative.
Okay, and the plaintiffs scored well on that. And the decision makers were supposedly considering past performance. I see that my time is up.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Brummer. Okay, next case for argument is